Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Opening week is finally upon us. The Cavs are playing regular season basketball this week, and joining us today is a very special guest to answer some of our burning questions about this year. But before we get to that, I have to introduce my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
I thought I was the special guest, but I guess not.
No, unfortunately not. But joining us today, entering his 24th season on an NBA bench, having served as both an assistant and a head coach, assistant coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Sidney Lowe. Coach, how's it going?
It's going great, guys. And thank you for having me on.
Oh, it is an absolute pleasure. As I was digging through your resume, I was impressed to learn that you were the last head coach of the Vancouver Grizzlies, which to me is interesting as a Canadian. If there was a team in Vancouver as I kind of went into those high school years, I don't know if I would have been a fan of the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think having a team outside of Toronto.
He was a man without a country.
I was a man without a country. I wasn't about to support a Toronto team. But we are very excited to have you on. And I actually want to start off before we get into the Cavs. I want to talk about kind of the evolution of the game through your lens as a coach over your career. What has changed the most during your time as a coach in the NBA? Is it how you approach players? Is it the complexity of the schemes or other evolutions of the game? What do you feel like has changed the most over that time?
I think it's... It's definitely a couple of things, but if I had to say most, probably since the time when I came in, just the way the game is played now. Then, you know, the game was really, you had great guards in this league, but you had dominant big men.
Right.
And you know, oftentimes coaches would tell the guards the game is played inside out, whereas now the game is played outside out, it's not outside in. It's outside out. So, you know, that's a big difference. That's a big difference because, again, there's not a lot of dominant big men. We have a couple guys, obviously, that can go down on the block and get you baskets. So the game has really changed from that aspect where there are a lot more, obviously, a lot more threes being taken today. Than it was back then. The stretch, now they don't say power forwards. They say
I feel like that position forwards. Just doesn't even exist anymore.
It doesn't exist. No, there's no power forwards now. You know, there's no Karl Malones and, you know, Otis Thorpes and guys like that now. So it's now stretch fours. So definitely the game itself has changed. I think, yeah, you know, the relationship part of coaches with players and understanding the guys now. You know, guys are coming in a little younger, a lot younger, actually, because, you know, back then you basically went 4 years of college. So you had a chance to mature a little more. Not saying that these guys aren't mature, but when you get 4 years of college, you know, you have a chance for a coach to really.
23-year-old me is a lot better of a person than 19-year-old me. Right. So you know, like, that's just
that's
natural,
just a life, right? That's yes. A life in general. So it's different in that aspect. Those guys coming out back then, they experienced some things that the younger guys don't get an opportunity to do now. You know, whether it's you know, getting used to a coach really getting on you real hard and yelling at you and really not caring about what you think, you know.
Yeah.
but now you get the guys and, you know, so there's an adjustment on their part, but it's also an adjustment on the coach's part, because at the end of the day, the game today, it's about I say relationships, you know, in terms of understanding each other. You know, the player also has to understand the coach, but coaches really have to get to know your players. You've got to get to know them, because it's more important now that you get to know them, not just on the court, but off the court. You know, I try to start conversations off with the guys, especially new guys that I meet. I want to know the situation, their background, their family members, you know, their kids, you know, their siblings, you know, just so we're not just always talking basketball.
Right. So, you know, Justin and I always like to joke that to dumb fans like us, every NBA off front office is two people, the coach and the GM. And, you know, obviously, you know, there is this full coaching staff that all have, you know, specialized skills, specialized roles. And you talked about those relationships in your first year. Is there a player you've kind of found yourself gravitating to that you're like, oh, this is going to be one of my kind of guys that's on this roster right now?
In my first year in the league or my year here?
The first year here, this time around.
This time around. Actually, you know, it's a couple of guys, but I, you know, the guy that comes up to me quite a bit, I say comes up to me, but we talk is Jetty.
Mm, you know? Really?
Yeah. He just, you know, he comes to me, he and Marketing, they both seem, they come to me to talk, and they have a smile on their faces. I myself, obviously, I gravitate towards guards.
Yeah, sure.
So Colin and Darius, obviously, mm-hmm. those guys, you know, I try to gravitate towards those guys. So I it's been actually really good because these guys they're such great guys, and I feel very comfortable, you know, talking to all of them, really.
Yeah, are legends of Colin's workout insanity true?
I tell you what, you know, and I said the only guy, well, a couple of guys, but the one guy that he reminded me of the way he worked out was Kevin Garnett.
Wow. Really? Wow. That's yeah, high praise.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw Colin work out for the first time by himself and how he went hard and attacked the rim when he was running the drills with Mike G, and I'm watching him, and I said, well, let me see if he does that again. And he did it again. I said, let me see if he does it again. And each time he just went so hard. And I thought the only guy that I saw do that like that was Kevin Garnett, who did it every time. You know, when Garnett went by himself 1-on-0 and I would pass him the ball, he was in the post. He always made moves like someone was guarding him.
Right.
You know, he made the set. I mean, his
practice energy, like he's going to play, right?
He practiced like he played. That's what he did. And mm-hmm. that's that. And Colin does that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, practicing at 60% speed isn't exactly going to help prepare you for those games. You yeah. mentioned how it's more of a collaborative process when it's working with the players these days now. Has that impacted the dynamics of how tasks are delegated among a coaching staff? I mean, one of the things that we really noticed with the pandemic was without fans, you get a real sense of how big those benches truly are and how many people are a part of that process of coaching and working with a team. Has there been changes to the dynamics of coaching staff with dealing with those players or how tasks are delegated amongst the staff during your time as a coach?
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, when I first got into it, we had three coaches.
It's a little more robust now, eh?
Yeah, you have more guys now. So, you know, three coaches back then, you were really talking to a lot of guys. But no, coach will definitely delegate, you know, certain guys to either work with certain players. And so, you know, it's that guy's job, that coach's job to make sure that his player gets certain information, that they're aware of certain things. You know, if you see something happening on the court, you know, you might grab them at a timeout and just remind them of something, because you don't want to have too many people in the ear, you know, mm-hmm. of one player. So, but the key is that all of us as coaches, we're delivering the same message that the head coach would deliver.
Right.
So that's the important part. You know, you have to be careful as an assistant when you're assigned a player that you want to be close. You want to make sure that they that you're able to talk to them. But at the same time, you have to make sure that they still see you as a coach and not as a just a friend.
Right.
Because, you know, as assistant coach, you've got to be able to tell him the tough things that he may not want to hear. So and those are the things that the head coach might be telling. So we have to make sure we deliver that message. But the key part to that, though, is that you develop that relationship early so that now when you have to tell him something that he may not want to hear, he knows where it's coming from. He knows that it's coming from love and concern and just want to help you to be the best you can be. So that's why that relationship and understanding is so important.
One thing that we've heard from the Cavs the past year or two has been wanting to build a culture of accountability. And we heard it again at Media Day this year. Colin talked about it. I think Coach Bickerstaff talked about it as well. What does that look like in practice to you? Because, you know, it's such an easy buzzword to say, hey, we're going to be accountable this year. But actually doing it is another matter. So what does that look like in practice in your mind?
I think Coach has definitely made that point in practice. You know, there's times when he will stop practice and let the guys know that what we're doing and how we're doing it right now is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So his voice is definitely heard. In fact, he did it today. You know, he did it today and he told him we need to have a better day tomorrow. So, you know, he certainly is as they say, walking the walk, you know, or walking the talk, whatever he's doing it. And so that's what, and we as assistants, you know, when Coach gives us an assignment or a drill to do, you know, we have to do the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. It may not be in the voice that Coach would do it in, but we still have to do it. You know, we have to, if we're running a drill and the guys know me already, they know from day one, if we're running a drill and you don't do it right, I'm going to say, do it again, you know, and you do it again until we do it right. Because it's, you know, when Coach gives us an assignment, it's up to us to make sure that these guys do it the way he wants them to do it. And so, you know, our guys know me already. And so I won't tell you what they call me, but it's not bad. It's not bad. It's just it makes me feel old.
Well, it's funny. I feel like one of our strengths as fans between Carter and myself is we understand how little we actually do know. And one of the things
we're so good at knowing how much we don't know.
Yeah.
That's one of our strengths.
What one of the illuminating moments for me in my kind of experience as a fan was back when Dwayne Casey was with Toronto after the Rudy Gay trade, he was asked by a media member, hey, you guys, there's so much more ball movement. I'm noticing that the offense is flowing differently. Like, what different plays have you implemented? And his response was, we are running the same things as before. It's now about execution, getting the right players in that are making the difference. And I think people assume that NBA coaching is similar to football, where the play is called and that's exactly what you see on the field and you can make the judgments from there. And obviously one of the challenging things with this Cavs roster is there are so many young players. I mean, you look at like the core six guys under 23 years old. Can you speak to kind of the challenges of just finding that consistency with such young players that are working through some of those growing pains that you go through when you're trying to become a professional?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, work, and it's an adjustment for the players, you know, because when you look at, as you talk about experienced teams, they've gone through that process of being young and either making, you know, mental mistakes, whatever mistakes may be made. But in the, when they, after they get that experience, then they're locked in and they know situations, they know details, mm-hmm. they know how important details are to do the little things. And that's one of the things that Coach is talking about now, is that we want to learn how to play the game. You know, part of player development is not just showing guys how to go between their legs and do one-on-one moves and all that stuff, right? Part of development is teaching them how to play the game. And that's what experienced players do. They know how to play the game. So getting younger teams to understand how important it is to do all of those little things is huge. It's just huge. You know, you can take players from different teams that are experienced and put them on any team in the league, and they will play the same way because they just know how to play.
So, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to ask this because I thought a big takeaway from this last NBA championship where Giannis led the Bucks to a title and, you know, he didn't add a ton to the, you know, the quote unquote bag. You know, it's not like he was all of a sudden, like everyone forever was like, oh, he's just got to learn how to shoot threes. And then everything else will open up. And I don't think that's what changed for him. I think he just got better at the game. I think he learned to feel the game better and kind of see those spaces in between each action a little faster. And my question to you and a team this young is, how do you fast track that? Because some of this stuff, it's not about, you know, Darius has to get better at X. It's mostly, it's a lot of that intangible stuff. How do you fast track that kind of development that is so not about their actual skill set, but about the way they perceive the information around them?
I think by, you know, what we talked about earlier, by the fact that when we work, when we practice just like you're in a game. Mm-hmm. You practice with the same tempo, the same speed, the same details of that you would in a game. Second, teaching those moments, you know, when there's a play made and there's an easy right decision that should be made, and you try to do something different for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and coach, you blow the whistle. I said, no, the play is over here. That's the play. That's the right play to make. And so I think it's something where you just, you have to continuously remind, and they won't like it. They won't like it. You know, they're gonna say, coach, you're messing with my game right now,
right,
you know, right. But you have to continuously just teach them the right play. It's the right play to make, you know, and that's all Giannis did. He didn't need the sexy three. Like you said, people said he needed, you know, a lot of players want to be sexy. Losing is not sexy. Winning is sexy, right? And so Giannis said, no, I do this well, and I'm going to do this. And these guys around me, right, they compliment me when I do this. And you're right. He didn't add a three to his game. He just continued to get better at what he was doing and understanding when he needed to do it and when he didn't. So, you know, again, it goes back to understanding how to play the game and understanding how to win. You know, winning is not easy. It's mm-hmm. not easy, but you have to learn how to win. And that means decision-making becomes paramount. I mean, you have to make the right decisions.
Absolutely. And it was really interesting from our perspective to watch the preseason. We obviously got off to a rough start against Chicago. And then as it progressed, you could tell, okay, there's a little more movement. The defensive intensity was better. Guys like Evan Mobley, like you could tell game by game, he seems to be learning so much. When you look back at the preseason, was there one aspect of what the Cavs were doing that went better than you expected, having worked with them in practice?
You know, as you said, we got better from mm-hmm. that first Chicago game to the second Chicago game, and obviously Indiana, you can see a lot of improvement. I don't know if it was anything that went that I didn't expect to happen,
okay.
You know, because, you know, when you're coaching, you expect it. You expect we're going to continuously get better. But I give the guys credit for the fact that they did pick up the concepts defensively. Our ball movement got much better. As you saw, the mm-hmm. ball was moving around, body movement. The thing that I was impressed with or surprised me a little bit, actually, was the big three lineup, you know?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I would say that went better than I expected. It went better than I expected, you know? I mean, I didn't have any expectations on it, but it really impressed. I was like, wow, that looked pretty good, you know?
And I was skeptical. I will be the first to admit that I was really skeptical about that. And like we had discussions about kind of the pros and cons of starting or playing either the big three front court or even the starting front court or what we're presuming is the starting front court of Okoro, Mobley, and Allen. Obviously,
we won't ask you to break any news today, Coach.
Yeah, no, yeah. You don't have to reveal. You can keep those cards close to the vest there. But obviously, with the amount of talent that's on this team, there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching, and I think people make too much over who's starting versus hey, within the flow of the game. I mean, even the game where the big three started, or the three big started, they only played 5 minutes together. There's so much mixing and matching. But when you do have a front court of, let's say, Okoro, Mobley, and Allen, what are some tactical adjustments that you feel can be implemented to generate movement and spacing without those guys necessarily being high-volume, proven three-point shooters? Because as Carter mentioned, like whether it's like Zion in New Orleans, where there wasn't a lot of spacing and they still had an effective offense, or Giannis getting it done without a three-point shot. What are some of the adjustments you can make when you don't necessarily have those proven shooters to generate that movement and spacing?
Well, I think what we've been doing actually is making sure that the ball continues to move. Mm-hmm. You know, the spacing is huge. You've got to create space, because if you're a player that's not comfortable with shooting the ball, then you need space. So if you catch it, you can put it on the floor.
Right.
So I think whether it's Okoro at three or Jetty at three or Markkanen at three, I think the way we play in terms of our spacing doesn't change. It doesn't change. It just now is a matter of what does that guy do when he catches the ball? You know, is he going to drive it or can he shoot it? If he's open, but for us right now, and it's just, we want to make sure that we get the basics down, which is the spacing and the ball movement, no matter who's in those positions.
Mm-hmm.
Our five is going to normally stay around that basket area, but the other four guys, they've got to be able to move around, and keep the ball moving and don't hold the ball. So mm-hmm. the spacing is the most important thing. And it's something that we've been working on a lot.
When you're playing a lineup like the one that started most of the preseason games, or I guess maybe not most, because we had some players get dinged up here and there, but starting that lineup of Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Mobley, and Allen, how important is it for those guards to be stretching the floor with volume three-point shooting to kind of generate that space where there might not be otherwise? Obviously, three-point attempts is like, if you ask any Cavs fan, they're like, we want Darius to shoot more, we want Colin to shoot more. Like how important is that, and how do you coach that up to kind of tell Darius, who is someone who likes to pass and probe into the defense, like, yo, we know that shot isn't perfect, but you're really good at shooting, so we want you to take more of those.
Yeah, it's funny, these questions, because it's going to go back to, again, our spacing that we play with, and then depending on who it is, their penetration. Because the one thing we talk about with Darius is he likes to penetrate and he can find people. Now, the key is, once he penetrates and he kicks, he's got to relocate.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to relocate, and now he's got to get out. So now if someone else drives it, he's ready for the kick for the spot up three. So, that it's interesting when people think about a player generating more threes, they think that player has to have the ball in their hands to generate it, and you really don't. If everybody else is playing the right way, then they will generate some of those threes, for DG as well. So he can take some with the ball, but he can get some off the ball if the other guys are doing what they're supposed to do, just like when he penetrates and he finds them for threes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny you kind of talk about that relocation, because the master of the relocation three, Steph Curry, is the one who has given Darius a ton of love this offseason. Yep. And you're right, because Justin and I talked about this, because Justin was someone who was really eager to see Rubio and Darius play together, and mm-hmm. we kind of found in just watching as fans, we were like, Darius isn't all the way comfy off ball yet. He's used to being on ball, and he's going to have to develop those skills if he's ever going to truly, hit his impact ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's the important part is getting comfortable with it. And then you the guy you mentioned about relocating, he's the best at it. And so, again, understanding that we want Darius to get more threes, but they're going to be generated sometimes by other people,
right?
Not just him coming off of pick and roll and pulling up behind the screen. Sometimes those are good shots, sometimes they're not. If everyone is playing the right way, the way coach wants him to play, and we keep our spacing and we get that penetration. Now he's open for that kick, you know, but that's that relocation. You've got to, you can't get in the lane, make a pass, and then stand in the lane.
Right.
You make the pass, you got to relocate out, get to your boxes, which we have out there on the court, to give, just to remind them to get to their spacing, you know, then those shots will come.
Yeah, I feel off-ball movement is going to be such a key for this team offensively. Like, you could see even in the preseason where I think things were a little stagnant against Chicago. It was kind of Okoro was standing in the corner. You'd see Darius run the pick and roll, but because there wasn't any real movement to set it up, things got a little congested. And then you saw as it progressed, like Evan Mobley would get an elbow touch and all of a sudden Okoro's cutting baseline because that is now available to him. Garland is going to need to get comfortable playing off of Ricky Rubio. Honestly, like I think it's going to be great for his development, because whether it's playing with a point guard like Ricky Rubio, or even just a way to facilitate Okoro getting more on-ball reps, or Mobley initiating the offense. It's so important for these guys to learn how to play off ball, even if they are going to be primary initiators. Can you speak to what having a veteran like Ricky Rubio means for these guards? Because obviously the experience that he can lend, it seems like that's going to be a very big deal for Garland, Sexton, and the team overall.
Yeah, Ricky's great, and I think he has the respect from the players, and Garland and Sexton and Pangos. They look at him, they look up to him, because he knows how to play the game and he knows how to play that position, and so his conversations with those guys are so important, you know, to our team. You know, it's different from a coach telling you and a player telling you.
Right.
You know, they might be telling you the same thing, you know, but when you're hearing it from someone that's actually in there doing it, and that someone who's done it recently, not someone back in the day.
Right.
You listen a little better. But yeah, he's been great. Ricky has been great. And the more that they can just talk to him and absorb his knowledge, his wisdom, it's just going to make them a better player. It's going to make him a better player. And Ricky obviously is one that loves to play with guys that move without the ball. Mm. Because when he's penetrating, he's looking for cuts. He's looking for guys moving to open spots. And so, you know, he's going to be great for those guys.
We've spent a lot of time talking about the offensive side of the ball. And I think there's a reason why this team was not a particularly strong offensive team last year, but you know, the defense really tailed off at the end of last year. And, you know, that's something that Ricky also adds, which is point of attack defense, which is something that, you know, the two young guys and Darius and Colin have kind of struggled with at this point in their career. What can they learn from him on that side of the ball? Because there's so much focus on, you know, running the offense on the offensive end. But man, that guy can defend. And like, it's not like he has insane physical tools either. I mean, he's good size, but that's pretty much it. Like, what can they take from him on that side of the ball? Because that side of the ball, I think in a lot of ways, will define that backcourt ceiling.
Yes, I think that, again, you know, talking to him about his technique, you know, how does he get around those screens? What's he doing? What's he doing to that defender on that pick and roll to make him think he's going to go under, but he goes over, you know? But, you know, the thing with Ricky, first thing with Ricky, one, obviously his intelligence, but two, you know, Ricky's tough and he, you know, Ricky's going to put his nose in there. He's going to get in there. So, you know, that's, if you're going to defend, if you're going to be good at defending or decent at defending, you got to be willing to put your nose in there. You got to be willing to put your body in there and really get through those screens and fight through those screens. But Ricky has learned also, like I said, he's so smart. You know, if Ricky knows the plays, not just our plays, he'll know the other team's plays. So he'll know if a guard is trying to make a pass, say to the high post, he knows the play. So he's going to play it and make it tough for him to get that pass to the high post, you know, just little things like that. But again, them talking to him, him communicating with them, you know, those small things that, as you said, it's not that he's super quick, you know, it's not that he's super athletic, but he's smart and he's tough and he's not afraid to put his nose in there.
Circling back to kind of the three big lineup, I mean, any combination of Love, Markkanen, Mobley, Allen, like it seemed to really work. And it, like those guys, no matter which combination, it's an absolute unit out there. It's did it take any convincing to get those three guys to buy into working together on the floor and trying those units? Or was that something that, hey, they view it as an opportunity for playing time and it was an easy sell?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Coach talked to him about it. I mean, I know he talked to him about it, but I don't know if he had to sell him on it. You know, we just have some great guys. And you know, when Coach puts them in a position, they go and they do it. You know, Markkanen at the three, he didn't hesitate. You know, Coach told him to do it, and he went there and he played it. You know,
he's more mobile than I realized. Like, when it comes to the almost like Duncan Robinson type threes that he generates on the perimeter to the time he crossed up DeRozan to get to the rim. Like there were moments that this kind of jumped out as someone that's been a fan of his game, but didn't fully comprehend just the mobility that he has at that size.
Yeah. You talk about a surprise. That was a surprise to me. We talked about it. We talked about him. Coach talked to us about it. And I didn't know that he would do what he did this fast, this soon. Mm-hmm. And I say do what he did, like to feel comfortable with it.
Right.
I thought it would take him some time, but he just did it, you know. And the one thing I will say about him is he's learning two positions and he knows them both already.
Wow.
He knows the three and the four already. So that helps, you know, again. The intelligent part of understanding how to play certain positions when Coach puts you in there, you know. And if I can stay on marketing for a second, he does everything hard. Like, you know,
I don't think that would be his reputation.
Yeah, like, no, he does it. He goes, you know, when we say, you know, run. Like he runs every time. You know, I'm not gonna jinx him now. He might get in the game and don't run, but he does all the little things. He remembers to do the small things that Coach talks about. So I'm not surprised, now having been around him, that he's making that adjustment fast. But it's still going to be an adjustment because he's going to play against some different players, some really good threes when he's at the three. But you know, I know he's going to work at it, and I feel good about him.
I would like to talk a little bit about Evan Mobley, because he was obviously the prize of the offseason. You know, Cavs jumped up in the lotto. What have you seen from him so far in his, you know, his very, very young career? What's something that from, you know, from when you first met him to now that he's gotten better at, that he's grown in early in his professional career?
I think he's getting more comfortable with the offense and understanding where his attack positions are going to come from. I think though that's been the evolution for him is learning that the shots he's going to be able to get. You know, the one thing again, and I said about marketing is Evans is a very smart player. He's smart.
The feel jumps off the film with him.
Yeah, he knows how to play the game. He can see passes, you know, where you think, wow, how did he see that? You know, you wouldn't expect him to from that position to see those type of plays, but he does.
I mean, he ran a big pick and roll at the elbow for a lob. You don't see that a lot.
No, you don't. You don't. But and what I think is great is that Coach is seeing those things in him. So Coach is, you know, kind of adding something and push it a little more just to see if he can get it, you know. And so he's shown that he can pick things up pretty quick. And so, you know, and Coach is not going to push it too far, but he's obviously added some things in there to allow Evan to have more freedom to do some things because he's capable.
So physically, he obviously, everyone knows that filling out is, you know, agenda number one for him. That'll take him from being a pretty good player to being a great player. What are ways he can succeed right now, even though he's probably going to be at a size disadvantage from a weight perspective and a strength perspective against a lot of these NBA bigs? Like how can he kind of overcome that in the short term while he waits on his body to fill out?
Well, I think from an offensive standpoint, use his length and his quickness. Mm-hmm. You know, now that might sound weird because he, as you said, you know, when he plays against a smaller, stronger guy, then that guy can get up under him.
Yeah.
So for him, instead of trying to back down all the time, he's got to face up. He's got to catch it face and now make a quick move and now get to his point, whether it's in the paint, and then you just shoot right over top of the little guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, he right now his advantage is his quickness and his length. So from an offensive standpoint, so it's not the power back down, is use that quickness and that length to get to your spot so you can be able to get that shot off, you know, against guys.
And when he plays, and I'm sorry, Justin, but when he does play, when he does get that head of steam and he does get to a spot, I have noticed he does play with a little bit of nasty. He's got some power to him. He had that drop step dunk, and I think the first or the second game. So it's like he has that kind of predisposition to like the bump. But yeah. You're right that how he gets there is very, very important.
That's the key, is how he gets there. Yes, that's the key for him right now, is using his speed and his length to get to that point. And once he gets to your point, when he gets to that point, then he can finish it.
Yeah, well, you said that it may sound weird, and a lot of things with Evan Mobley can sound weird, and then you see him on the basketball court, and you're like, oh, yeah, that is what he does. Like, his ability to just how much with that first step, how much space he covers with those arms, the ball control, the tenacity, like, it's really impressive. How do you, as a coaching staff, go about balancing the individual growth of some of these young players with the desire to take a step forward as a team? I mean, obviously, no one's really come out and put labels on how many wins or anything like that, expectations this year, but a lot of the players have spoken about looking to make that push towards winning. When you have situations where what a player's most comfortable doing isn't necessarily in the best interest of team success, how do you balance that process out when you are working with these young players?
You know, that's something that Coach Bickerstaff has talked about a number of times, is there's going to be times when we have to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to sacrifice as a player, not to go to your thing, but go to the team's thing.
Right.
You know, and it could change from game to game. You know, sometimes there's going to be times where Coach might say to a guy, hey, I need you to carry us. I need you to get us a few buckets. Go get it. But I think again, going back to the main thing is just playing the game the right way, you know, playing it the right way. What's best for the team? Mm-hmm. You know, we have guys on this team that can make some shots. We have guys on this team that can do certain things. So the ball has to move to the right person and allow that person to do what they do well, whether it's drive it, whether it's shoot it, whatever it is. So the growth, and again, you know, and I said this before, you know, I think you have to be careful with the growth of a player individually and a growth of a player team wise. You know, you want to grow individually to being able to make moves and get around people and do things, and then you've got to make the right decision. You know,
right.
If you get around someone and a big comes, say, as a guard, and then you want to shoot it over big when you have a dump off or pass out, then that's not good for the team. So the growth, you know what I mean? So the growth comes in two parts. It comes in individually, and then it comes in for, you know, for the team, making the right play based on how we want to play the game.
No, absolutely. Carter, you were about to speak.
Oh, I was just going to ask you. I mean, obviously, we've been talking a lot of the micro details on, you know, individual players, but like, If you were to just kind of like sum up your goals for the sentence in like one or two sentences, like what are the staff's goals right now?
I think the main thing that coach has talked about is in terms of a game situation is that we want to be the hardest playing team on the floor. We want to be that, you know, that's a goal to do is to play hard. And he talks about playing together. He talks about playing together, you know, and that goes back to what we've been talking about, ball movement, body movement. You know, LM says something today, LM Markkanen. He said something today, I'm sorry. He says something today in the huddle when we broke. We get in there and guys will say, okay, details on three or teamwork on three or whatever. And LM said, sacrifice for others.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that is in a lot of ways, I feel like that has been the challenge of this team the last couple of years is, you know, there are a lot of parts that we like, you know, we especially this podcast, you know, we love Darius. We love Colin. We love Jarrett. We're really excited for Evan. But one thing that this team hasn't been able to figure out how to do yet is be more than the sum of their parts. And, you know, if you've got, you know, four top 30 players, then it's okay to not be more than the sum of your parts. But you know, where this team is right now, like if they're going to take that leap, they're going to have to find that synergy and become, you know, one of those teams who's like, damn, why are they so good? You know, like when these teams that haven't been paying attention run into them. So I think that's, I love to hear that goal. Cause I really do think that it's what this team needs. It needs to figure out how to be that, that collective that is just a pain in the ass for everyone else to play.
Yeah, and that's what coach wants. That's what coach wants from a defensive standpoint. He wants us to be, you know, active and aggressive and just not being outworked. And from an offensive end, he wants us to play together as a team. He wants us to sacrifice, like LM said, sacrifice for someone else. And you know, you said something, Carter, that was interesting, you know, winning games and team, you want team people to look and say, how are they winning? Because most people don't look at how you're playing the game, you know, the little things, the sacrificing the little things, because we don't have that guy to go get 30 or 40 every night, get 30 a night. You know, we don't have that guy. So we have to do it collectively. And you know, as coaches preaching to our guys, you know, the most important thing is to win the game and each team has a certain way that will give them a chance to win a game. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing to sacrifice to do those things in order to win. And that's what coach has been preaching all of training camp. And, you know, and I think our guys have gotten better at it from game one, you know, to the Indiana game. You know, we had situations, and it's something that I, you know, on a stat sheet, I'll tell coach at certain times. I think in the Indiana game or the Chicago game, you know, we had 13 field goals on 11 assists. Mm-hmm. And then we have 15 field goals on 13 assists. You know, so that's telling him that the ball is moving to the right people. And, you know, when the ball is moving, you as a shooter, or even not as a shooter, you as a teammate, when you know that next pass is coming because it's supposed to come, then you have confidence because you're getting ready for that ball to take that shot.
Right.
If you don't know it's coming, or it comes sometimes, it doesn't come sometimes, now you're not ready because you don't think it's going to come.
I mean, we've literally seen this happen on some of these, like, you know, heliocentric offenses, we always like to call them, where it's just one dude pounding the rock and exclusively running every pick
especially
and roll.
Especially in the playoffs. In the playoffs.
These shooters are out of rhythm, and sometimes you miss 27 straight threes in a game.
You don't even need the attempts, right? Like, it's just the touches. If the ball is moving, 100%. If you're getting the feel of it, like, it makes such a big difference.
100%. You just want to feel the ball. You want to feel it. You know, you can't just sit over there and just stand in the corner or stand in the slot and not touch the ball. You've got to touch the ball. And you know, that's one of the things, again, that coach is talking about, is playing together, making each other better, sacrificing you know, the whole, you know, sacrificing the individual thing for the team thing.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I'm excited because it sounds like you guys are getting off on the right foot. This is a group of players that historically throughout their careers, like these young guys get better as the season progresses. So I'm looking forward to seeing that gradual improvement. I want to be respectful of your time here and get you out of here. But before we do, one final question. Okay. Is there a team throughout your coaching tenure that this Cavs roster reminds you of the most?
Oh, wow.
That's a good question, Justin. I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I can't say that it does because I'm when I look at this team, I'm looking at the two young point guards. I mean, the two young guards. Mm-hmm. And then the bigs that we have here. You know, I had young point guards in Vancouver with Mike Bibby and Mike Dickerson. Mm-hmm. And then I had Sharif at the three, but I didn't have a Evan Mobley at the four, and I didn't have that. Didn't have a K-Love who could shoot a guy. Didn't have a Ricky. So
it's a unique roster. Know. There's no denying
yeah,
that.
it is. And it, you know, it's probably it might be the first team where I wouldn't say the strength, but we're loaded in bigs. Mm. You know, we have, you know, you've got a talented marketing, a young talented Mobley, a stretch proven shooting Kevin Love, a blocking JA. And you know, your front line, you know, our front line is pretty strong there. So
even Dean Wade, who's worked his way into becoming a rotation player. It's unbelievable. You know,
it's funny because I didn't name Dean because I had Dean was even looking at playing some threes. So it's kind of like, right. But yeah,
he might have to, if he wants to get some minutes.
Yeah. You know, so, and you're right. But Dean, so, you know, we're so deep in the front court and I haven't been with a team that's been this deep in the front court. I've been with most teams where, you know, the perimeter players was it. So this is different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Coach. We really, truly appreciate your time. Best of luck this season. And big thanks to our listeners as well. If you guys are listening on podcast, make sure to leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, you can do so by leaving a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.